This episode is sponsored by JDAQA Software Testing, your scalable solution for manual, automated, security, and performance testing. Check us out at JDAQA.com. And with that, let's get on with the show.
This is The First Customer, hosted by Jay Agner.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the First Customer Podcast. Today, I'm lucky enough to be joined by Jerry McNamara. He is the CEO and founder of Proven Chaos. He is a stealth Eagles fan, I guess you'd say, down there in Jacksonville. As you can see, everyone, today, big Eagles game today. I don't normally wear my gear, but it's the rematch from Super Bowl last year, so decked out. Jerry, welcome to the show, buddy. How are you?
Jay, I am as pumped as you are for us to redeem our loss in the Super Bowl against Andy Reid and all the rest of those chuckleheads in Kansas City. So I was pumped when you showed up and I was like, this is my guy. Listen, Philly has its own, you know, flavor. You come to Jacksonville, people look at you a little strange when you say you're from Philly. And so, yes, I'm super excited. And I'm excited to be here with you. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being on, man. And yes, we certainly do have a flavor here. I'm a transplant, but they welcomed me with open arms about 20 years ago. And as a lot of people know, Virginia does not have any professional sports teams. So I didn't want to just kind of pick one. And I found a home here and we have lots of great sports. So let's get into your story. Where did you grow up? And do you think that had any impact on you being an entrepreneur?
Yeah, so I grew up just outside of Philadelphia, and so hence I'm an Eagles and Phillies and Flyers fan, not so much a Sixers fan, but do I think it had an impact on me? You know, it is interesting. Both my mom and my dad were employees. In fact, my mom had a seventh grade education and dropped out of school to help support her 12 brothers and sisters and, you know, had a successful career. She went into business training school, but had a successful career as a paralegal in Philadelphia. My mom was always scared to death about me being an entrepreneur. And I remember there's one spot on the highway, Jay. I had called my mom on the way home from work, and I was calling to let her know that we had made the Inc. 500 for the second year in a row. And she's like, son, that's wonderful. However, make sure you work hard. There's a lot of people counting on you now. And I just had a bit of a chuckle. And so from a young age, I didn't have inspiration from my parents as far as like an entrepreneur, but my high school soccer coach, he was an entrepreneur, and I enjoyed working with him and learning from him. And I would say, you know, the reason I became an entrepreneur was I had been a senior leader inside of companies, and I got tired of being comfortable making decisions, generally the decisions being pretty good ones that made people money. And I thought, why am I making other people money when I can do this for myself? So I just quit letting people make margin on me and started doing it for myself.
Yeah, I think, well, so that's an interesting point. I think a lot of people come to that realization. You know, they don't have to be a senior executive in a company to realize that somebody else is making money off the sweat on their back. Why do you think, or what kind of gave you that extra push to go do it?
Well, I felt like I was taking on the stress as I owned it anyway. You know, one of the things I've always said growing up was act like you own it. There's a level of pride that you bring to everything that you do. And I just thought, man, if someone's paying me, you know, $100,000, they're making $1 million because, you know, it's 10x as a portion of your salary. And so I just thought, there's no reason for me not to be in a place where I'm not reaping my own rewards. And, you know, part of that is having a level of confidence to do that. But also, I mean, entrepreneurship isn't for everyone, Jay. There is a level of risk. And, you know, I had a COO inside one of my early companies, and he said to me, I love being your number two. I never aspire to be the person who has the risk and has the ultimate say on all of these things. And he was terrific. He was a terrific COO, but entrepreneurship was not for him. And so I think it's just recognizing that there's an opportunity, that I feel like I have a gift to bring to the world, you know, that I can help people solve problems. I love tackling the biggest problems inside businesses. And that to me is fun.
Feel the stress and feel the, you know, but then there's some that don't, I like to think that I don't at least wear it on my sleeve as much, but do you think it's a risk tolerance thing? Like, what is it? And as you probably have guessed, I'm trying to get to like, what is it that somebody can tap into that to decide if like this is the leap I'm supposed to make or not?
So I say this all the time. Entrepreneurs are the biggest gamblers in the world. Every day we push chips back into the middle. And so if you're not someone who at least every once in a while buys a scratch-off ticket, buys a lottery when it's over $100 million, goes to the casino, not that you have to, you know, bring a 10 grand with you, but if you don't enjoy that level of not everything is in my control, then I would tell you entrepreneurship is probably not for you.
Hmm. All right. Fair enough. All right. So what was the first business you started?
Well, so the first one that I started was an internet company. And so we sold soccer uniforms, customized soccer uniforms to youth clubs and clubs all around, not only the United States, but the Caribbean as well. It was easy to ship product down there. They didn't have many resources. And really, it was integrating the company that I worked with in Toronto as a senior leader. They did all of the manufacturing and the customization, and then I could handle the sales and marketing. So I never saw the product, got drop shipped directly to the clubs that we worked with. And that was really fun because we solved a real problem in the marketplace for buyers, which was, you know, you need your uniforms by game time at the end of the day. It doesn't matter how much it cost, but you had to have them there by game time. And we were really good at that because we controlled the sales and marketing, the manufacturing, and we could make commitment that unless UPS really messed up, you were going to get your uniforms by game time if we told you that you were going to get them.
I think you said you had an interesting story around your first customer for that. Is that the same business?
Yeah. So, you know, I've never been the technical leader. I've led five businesses and I've never been the technical leader. So I decided to start an internet business without knowing how to code. And this is, you know, 2007 before things like CSS and, you know, being able to change your website globally was easy to do. But I remember I was working on the website, you know, five months to actually get the website to a place where I was happy with it. And I had just started advertising on Overture. So Overture was a precursor to Google. That was the predominant advertiser if you wanted to do it online. And it was about 7 o'clock at night and I was showering and I heard a phone ringing and I thought, is that the phone? I poked my head out. And I literally was like, oh my God, that's my first phone call. And I grabbed a towel, I'm dripping wet, ran to my office, and I answered the phone. Hello, Totally Soccer, how may I help you? And proceeded to sell my first set of uniforms. Now, this was in a day and age where, you know, buying things online was still kind of a novelty. And the woman who was placing the order, she said to me, now, wait a second. You're not one of those fly-by-night companies that's going to steal my credit card, are you? And I said, no, ma'am. I'm here working every single day. This is what we do. And I was not lying. But, you know, I took my first order, ran my first credit card, dripping wet, coming out of the shower.
Beautiful. I love that story. And I love that lady's trust in you. That's all you had to say was, no, ma'am. We're not a scam artist. And she's like, okay, that sounds like a good enough answer.
We're good.
Yeah, well, here's my financial livelihood. Go run this card number. So where did you go after that? What was the next business you went on to start or found or run?
Yep. So the next one was I was brought in as CEO of a construction business. And the owner was about to sell that business just because the amount of stress and the growth that had happened. So I came in at 7 million. We went from 7 million to 13 million to 28 million to 30 million and made, you know, Inc. 500 fastest growing companies. And I think more proudly, best places to work, that you can run a high growth company and still be a place where people enjoy showing up and have fun doing it. And so I went and did that one. I mean, the humor in that, Jay, is I told the owner who was bringing me in, I said, I am the least handy person you will meet. I said, the only thing I hammer is my keyboard, but you don't want anyone else to hammer their keyboard and run their business for you than me. And so that was a really fun opportunity.
Is it a show? Is it a podcast? Do you have a show called Best Places to Lead?
I do.
And what's the premise for that?
Yeah, the whole premise is that we interview senior leaders, CEOs, inside high growth companies about how they create compelling companies where people want to show up. Because my experience is when you have a compelling company that people are really interested in showing up and having fun at work, you're going to outperform the marketplace. And I don't know about you, if you've ever had this situation, but I've never met anyone who said, when they showed up to work, you know what, I'd really like to stuck at work today. And yet there's plenty of people who are ineffective in their role. And what I say is it's not their fault. It's our fault as the senior leaders. We haven't created the clarity for you on how you win every day. And I call it the four C's: clarity on how you win, challenged by the work that you do, comfortable that you have the tools, time, and training to be successful. And the fourth one that most people get wrong is cared about, you know, by your leader.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that hard to run compelling businesses. And so that's really the goal, is we're better together. Let's share those insights of like, oh, that's what works for you. That's really interesting. I never considered that before, because it's lonely being a business owner and an entrepreneur. I mean, you look left, you look right, and it's like, oh shit, actually the last call is mine. And so I think if we can put people together into places to share those ideas, to share the journey and the experience, I just think you end up in a better place.
Yeah. It is strikingly, it's not funny. It's just surprising how often people get that wrong. Right.
I mean, totally. And yet on the other side of this, Jay, have you ever imagined that someone would start a business and say, I really want to start a sucky business where people show up and hate the work that they're doing? But it we don't bring enough planning and conscious intention to the business and the work that we're going to go do. And then we get stressed, and stress doesn't make good decisions.
Yeah.
And so there are easy things that you can do in the process. It's, you know, it's business acceleration model, which is what I use to evaluate companies and how we get them to grow really fast. But, you know, the foundation of every company is the vision, the values, and the resources. It's like, okay, what's the dent in the universe? What's the North Star that we're going to go, you know, make an impact on? What are the values? That's the operating system that we agree to treat each other in this way every day. And, you know, what are the resources? How many mistakes can we make inside a business before we go out of business? That's really your pile of resources. It could be intellectual capital. It could be financial capital, human capital. It's not just financial capital. Most people think about it as cash, but, you know, it's not that hard. Like, to your point, what is the important, painful problem that you're solving for your clients? And I think, you know, when people start thinking about marketing and, you know, finding my customers in the marketplace, you have to first identify what is the important, painful problem that someone is willing to take a dollar out of their pocket and pay me to solve.
Yeah.
And if you're not clear on that, then it's hard to have a marketing message that's going to resonate in the market. Like, oh, well, yeah, I'm not exactly sure what Jay does. I think he's kind of in this marketing space. Well, no one sets out to like, oh, I need marketing. It's like, no, I need more leads, or my social media isn't working, so therefore I need someone that's going to be a strategist and help me get, you know, more followers that can convert into leads. And so I think if you can be clear on the important, painful problem, and I choose those words really carefully, because I call them Monday morning problems. There's a lot of people that solve problems, but if the executive team isn't thinking about the problem that you solve until Thursday or Friday, you are ripe for displacement, because your impact on the business is not that great. You want to serve Monday morning problem, where they come into work and they say, man, I want to see how Jay's marketing is doing for us. How many new leads did we get? How many new appointments have been set? Now you're in a good place, because the people that you're serving are caring about the product or service that you're bringing to marketplace. So that's why I choose that. And the second piece of that is, who specifically do you solve that for? Right. And it's not a company. It's not, you don't identify companies. It's people buy from people.
Right.
So you have to be really specific about who you solve it for. And then the third piece, in order to be successful, is where do those people hang out? Where is their water cooler, so that I can find places to market and have conversations with them, to get into places of community, so that we can bridge know, like, and trust? And if that's the case, geez, I try and share this all the time. It's not really about selling. It's about serving. Because Jay, if you have an important, painful problem that you need solved, and I have conviction that I can solve that problem for you, it's not really sales, it's service. why would I not try and get another human being out of pain? Like, Jay, I know you have this problem and it's really important to you. Like, let me show you the way. Come this way. Let me show you how to do it. And, you know, sometimes people get concerned about, oh, I don't want to sell. I don't like to sell. It's like, it's service. You have an obligation to go help people because you have the best service that they need to get them out of pain. And so that's how I think about that area of the business.
Yeah, no, I think you hit on a bunch of important stuff there. To rewind a little bit, I think internally, ownership of everything, like you pointed to, like it's not the employee's fault that they're ineffective at their job, right? It's not fault. It's not anybody's fault that anything wrong happened, because at the end of the day, either you brought them in directly or you brought somebody in that brought them in, And it's like, there's somewhere along the way, it always goes back to you. And if it doesn't, and maybe that's like a defensive, you know, defense mechanism, maybe it's whatever that people kind of, you know, try to shield themselves and they don't, the inability to kind of admit when things went wrong. That's the biggest piece I've tried to continue to grow myself over the years. Just like, there's literally nothing in this business that is anybody else's fault. Like there's no, doesn't matter who made 100%. What decision, like doesn't matter what it is or who it was or who, like it does not matter. Like I put that person there at the end of the day. And like, you can do one for one work and you can be responsible for that, or you can hire other people to do that work, but then you're delegating that responsibility that still comes back to you. So it's like, there's this loop that goes back to the leadership and the team. So I think it's a great point.
I think it's, you know, I have tongue in cheek with some of my CEOs and they'll, you know, be frustrated with an employee and I'll say, you do realize that it's your job to disinvite them on the mission that you invited them on. Right. I mean, there's no reason to be frustrated.
Right.
It's like, I mean, we solve important, painful problems for external customers, but internal customers do the same thing. We hired someone to solve an important, painful problem that I was willing to pay them for. And if they're not doing a good job, then, you know, I have to look at the 5 T's of execution. Tool, time, and training. They're on me. Have I given you the tools that you need, enough time to do it, and the training to be successful at it? Then I look at talent. Is this person talented enough to actually solve the problem that I hired them to solve? And then the last is tenacity and self-talk. Like, are they the type, Jay's the type of person that takes ownership for his business no matter what. And so therefore that's why he's more successful. And when people start to outsource or deflect or victim mentality, boy, the opportunity to make an impact inside that business is super important.
The 5 T's, the 4 C's. I need a couple more lists. All right, let's fast forward to Proven Chaos. I love your logo, by the way. Very cool.
Thank you very much.
I like that a lot. Who was your first customer? And well, first of all, who do you guys serve? And who was your first customer?
Yeah, so I serve CEOs of high growth companies. So the reason Proven Chaos, you've proven there's a marketplace, but your people, your systems, your product processes are in chaos because they haven't kept up. My first customer, I never aspired to be in this business. So I didn't know anything about it. I had just run a number of businesses and I got introduced to a new regional CEO here. And I started going to breakfast with him and I had a great time. And so I blame all of this on Matt Foxall. And he was like, how do I hire you? And this is when I had exited the construction business. I said, I'm not for hire. This is not what I do. I drop my kids off. I go on the boat every morning, put 4203 in the water and go out and fish, go pick my kids up. He's like, no, you have a gift for this. I need your help. Come on, this is going to be amazing. And I was like, all right, let me think about it. And so Matt drug me kicking and screaming because he has a sales background and he's good at what he does. And Matt continues to be a client today. And that was, I don't know, maybe 6 or 7 years ago. I have never over the course of my entire, you know, time serving people, and I shouldn't probably say this on this podcast, but I've never marketed my business. It's all been done by word of mouth. Hey, I know this guy, Jerry, he probably can help you. And that's been an amazing part of, you know, the journey as I've continued to think about how I run the businesses. And now as I get to, I tell all of my clients, like they're the petri dish where I get to test all of these things out because I am on a mission to positively impact 5 million people through better business. And it's just equipping CEOs with more tools and skills to go make the impact that they're made to go make while having a really great fun time doing it.
How are you measuring that, by the way?
So everyone always asks me that. I want to get like the Burger King, the McDonald's sticker behind
imagine,
me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So here's what I tell people. And the reason that this was over 5 years, so it's about to click down to 3 years. I will know in year four, it will become incredibly obvious because the two books that I'm writing, which are the 9 principles of personal performance, because every business needs great people inside of it. So let's give people a blueprint on how to show up, not only for themselves, but for the business in really authentic ways where they can perform. And the business acceleration model, which I referred to earlier, that's how I think about businesses. It's the model that I use to say, Jay, in your business, this is broken. There's something going on here. Let's go fix that. Those two will be on books, and I'll be on stages talking about that to people and how they can, live a more aligned, conscious life. Because I think the ultimate purpose of life is your life on your terms, vision, values, actions, and alignment. Chest puffs out. And then, the last piece of it is the gap that happens in leadership. Right? You think about people who go into business for themselves, like Nathan Adams, one of my clients out in Denver. He looked at me one day, he said, Jerry, there's no training to be CEO. And I was like, you're right, Nathan. Right. And you think about the same thing inside companies. The person who gets promoted is great at doing the doing. It doesn't mean that they're great at leading people. And so they're ill-equipped to actually cultivate that predictable environment where people can perform. And so, the third piece in the model is to use the leadership gap to train people to be predictable in their approach, to learn the skills, and then be strategic in, how we think about business and how we're going to make a dent, in the market that we serve. So if by year four, Jay, I'm not on stages and these books aren't in process, then you'll know that I will have not made it. But if they are, you'll know that I'm well on my way to doing what I set out to do.
I love it. All right. Last question, non-business related. And I wonder if it has to do with fishing. Yep. I wonder if it has to do with fishing or not. If you could do anything on earth and you knew you couldn't fail, what would it be?
I'm actually going to push back on this. Failure doesn't scare me. I think it's not doing things that scares me. Right. And so I would tell you, I've failed a ton in my life, but I've also learned from those things because I've been trying to do shit my whole life. And so if I truly want to go do things, I go do things. The thing that's most important to me today is to be a great husband and a great dad, right? The business side, all of those things, put them aside. And I learned this, in my first business when I exited. My identity was my business. And what I had to learn over about 6 months was it's my family, my friends, and my values. That's my identity. And so when I think about that, if I want to go do something, I'm going to go, let's go for it. And so failure is not part of something that holds me back.
All right.
And so
you're not the first person to skirt the question with that answer. So that's fine. That's fine. If going to space or something and not blowing up on a rocket is not on your list, that's fine. But I think it's fair, right? I mean, I think there's certain people who are wired that way, and I think it's a completely fair answer. So if people want to find you, Jerry, they want to find more about Proven Chaos, how do they do that?
Yeah, two best places to go are to go to provenchaos.com. Easy to find me there. And then I'm typically pretty active over on LinkedIn. So you can just search my name, Jerry McNamara, and you'll find me. But those are the places where I hang out the most.
How long do you think LinkedIn is going to be that place? Just out of curiosity. I never asked that question before, but I'm just curious. Because right now it's hot. It comes in dips and waves, but it's back up. Everybody's pushing towards it.
I think you're right. I've been on there. I was one of the early adopters on LinkedIn. I think they sent me a notice. I'm like 16 years on it. Insane.
Yeah.
And I didn't use it for a long time. It was just kind of like a placeholder for resumes, and it's evolved a lot, particularly in the last 4 years post-COVID. I think the challenge that they're going to have is with all of the automation that are happening, the spam messages, the connection requests with nothing behind it, it's just kind of a shrug of your shoulders. And so, I don't know, I think platforms run their useful life and then they rotate out. So, you know, Facebook to Instagram to LinkedIn to TikTok. I don't know what's going to be next.
Yeah, I don't know.
It'll be something.
I don't know. It always makes me think. I used to think it was the Facebook for business. I mean, I didn't really know what it was or how to use it. I just, like I said, it's a placeholder. You were supposed to have one, so you had one. But it seems hot again. People are on it and, you know, popping off. So, all right. Go ahead.
I would say you're right. But, you know, one of the things that I think about is, I don't know if you've ever been to a bar, but you go to a bar and you wear it out. You've been there so many times and you're finally like, oh, let's just try something else. Right. Let's just do something different. And so I think that will eventually happen because other platforms have seen that same rotation. But that's really how I think about that. Like when I was younger, we used to go to the same bar and then we'd look at each other and say like, yeah, Jay, let's go somewhere else. Just check it out.
Yeah, it's interesting. Well, for now, people will find you on LinkedIn. We'll link all your stuff in the bio. Jerry, great episode, man. Thank you for being on, brother. Enjoy the rest of your week. Have a happy Thanksgiving and go Birds. All right.
You too. Go Birds. Let's do it.
Thanks, buddy.